is next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today with Rabbi David Teichtel, who is the director of the Chabad Center here on the University of Illinois campus. We're going to be talking about the Jewish New Year. Our technical director today is Matt Kessler. If you'd like to join our conversation, do give WILL a phone call, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. So what's the Jewish New Year?
The Jewish New Year, it comes out different than all other New Years of the year. The Jewish New Year is actually coming up in a short 2.5 weeks. The Jewish New Year, it's actually a good question. What is the Jewish New Year? Because if people would look inside the Bible, look inside the Torah, they would see that the Jewish New Year is not counted from this time of the year. It's counted from when the Jews left Egypt. So what is the Jewish New Year? The Jewish New Year actually is about new beginnings. This is the time of the year where in the Jewish tradition we are taught and told that we are judged of how next year is going to be. That's one big part of it. And secondly, it's a time to renew our connection and our commitment to God and God's kingship over us. So there's two dynamics of it. It's about our relationship with God and about God promising us and hopefully giving us a good year. And it always comes out in the mid to end September, early October, because the Jewish year generally runs on the lunar calendar. So it's 354 days on average. So it's about 11 days shorter than the solar calendar. So every year we lose 10 days, and every 2 to 3 years we have a leap year. A leap year is not one extra day, it is 30 extra days. Uh-huh. So this upcoming year is going to be a leap year. So Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year this year, starts much earlier than usual, only 3 weeks after school begins. But the following year, Rosh Hashanah is going to be 6 weeks after school begins.
So it's always in the fall here in this part of the world, but it moves around a bit.
It's always in the fall, but it moves. And the reason why we add a new month every year is because we don't want Rosh Hashanah ending up in the spring. And in other religions, actually, where they follow the lunar calendar,
Precisely, like
Ramadan, could come out any time of the year.
Sure.
The Jewish calendar, that can't happen. Therefore, we add a leap year every 3 years, three times every 10 years.
I see. Now, tell us what the Hebrew words Rosh Hashanah mean.
Rosh Hashanah is literally translated the head of the year. Many people ask, why is it called the head of the year? It should be called the beginning of the year. And the reason is because just like a head of a person is not just the head of a person, it's what gives vitality and life. And if we don't have a head, we don't have anything else. So too, Rosh Hashanah is that day that gives vitality and life to the rest of our body. The highlight of Rosh Hashanah, actually, is blowing the shofar, blowing a ram's horn, which symbolizes a child's cry to a parent. Our cry to our Father in heaven, asking him for a good year.
I think we had Lee Melhado, a locally famed chauffeur,
yes.
Performer, do that on the radio
a few years
back. Yes,
it's a
haunting sound, isn't it?
It's actually a deep calling. It's interesting because the Kabbalah, the book on Jewish mysticism, over there it says about the shofar not only being a child's call, it's also like a trumpet at a coronation. The Jewish New Year is about, so to speak, giving a coronation God. Because Jewish tradition tells us that God doesn't want to be a dictatorship style. Every Jew should want to accept God upon them. And every year on Rosh Hashanah, that's what the services are about. It's about, I accept God as my king. I accept what he wants me to do. I love him and he loves me. It's all about, it's not about like sadness, it's about joy.
Now, you expressed that as you use the word I, the singular, but it's a very communal event also, isn't it?
Very communal. It's interesting to note, the Jewish New Year begins one day, but it's really a beginning of a 10-day period. Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, is a two-day event. It's a two-day holiday, which is observed through prayer services and festive meals and dinners, apples and honey, sweet things, only sweet things, representing it should be a sweet year. If you walk into the local supermarkets, you will notice there's a lot more honey products around then. You know, we worked with a lot of local stores to stock more of these products. You might notice a pomegranate, which is people eat it on the high Rosh Hashanah because it represents that many seeds and little pits in there. And it says, just as a pomegranate has many seeds, so too every Jew is full of good deeds. See, there's a lot of different traditions. Uh-huh. But essentially, Rosh Hashanah, these 2 days of the Jewish New Year, is the celebratory part. It starts, though, at 10 days of repentance. The morning after Rosh Hashanah, or actually the day of Rosh Hashanah itself, we start putting special prayers and supplications, asking God for forgiveness. And it all leads up to 10 days later, to the most solemn day on the Jewish calendar. This day is called Yom Kippur, which means a day of return, teshuvah, of repentance. Which is actually interesting to note, the Jewish view on repentance is not that we turn the page and start a new life, is that teshuvah means we return. Essentially, we're all good people, just we strayed off our way. These 10 days, starting with Rosh Hashanah, is 10 days of returning to the essence of who we are. We are all good people, and we just have to find our inner core. So Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, begins in 2 weeks, but it marks the beginning of the 10 days of repentance. And followed by that, there's another holiday. So essentially, it's 26 days of holidays. And that holiday is a joyous holiday. It's like, you know, it's like when you go to a wedding ceremony, the beginning is all serious and, you know, and then
promises.
Then we come to the celebration. And that's how it is. It's the first half of the month is all serious. The second half is all celebration.
Now, in Jewish thinking, why do good people stray from the right way?
That is a very good question, which I hear so many times. It's because we understand, you know, in Jewish tradition, we believe very strongly that people have choice. It says clearly in the Bible, in the Torah, that God says, I have created good and I have created bad. Please choose good. Yet, unfortunately, in order to make things more challenging for us, the non-good is always more enticing. The good doesn't always look as exciting. No, just like when we're on a diet, you know, the strawberry shortcake looks a lot better than a spelt bread. And that's life. So if you want to have the technical term for it, is it says a person does not sin unless a wind of folly came into their mind, meaning no one means to do bad. You know, I've spent many times visiting people in prison and all over. And whenever you meet someone, no one ever says, I wanted to do bad and I did bad. At that moment, they thought, yeah, this is not so bad. And unfortunately, that's human nature, that it says a wind of folly came into my mind. I thought, you know, it's not a big deal. And, you know, what, you know, today I'll do this, tomorrow I did that, and the next day. The basic idea is that it says every person has a, so to speak, animalistic soul, meaning a soul that wants pleasures, and a godly soul. And our godly soul is what wants us to do our spirituality. An animal soul is the soul that leads us in this world. And I use the term animal, meaning to say it's more of a physical thing. And our job is to train our animal soul, so to speak, to want us to only do good things and not do negative things. So it's up to you and I. It's up to every individual. They can make that decision.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with Rabbi Dovid Teichtel, who is the director of the Chabad Center here at the University of Illinois. There's also a Hillel Center. There's also a Jewish Federation. There's also a Sinai Temple. How many Jews are there in the Champaign-Urbana area?
The student community is estimated to be between 3,500 and 4,000, 10% of the student population. There's no way to get exact figures because it's a public institution and they don't ask people's religion. In the local community, it's estimated to be between about 1,000 to 2,000 local Jewish community members. I find for every affiliated member, there's 2 unaffiliated. That's just the way it is. I mean, every week I meet a new family. Every week I meet a new individual. So I believe it's a growing community.
Now, as a rabbi, I can ask you a question. What does Jewish thought think about the problem of evil, human choice? But are you speaking for all the Jews when you answer? Are you speaking just for one type of Jew? Are you Reformed, Conservative, Orthodox?
It's a very good question. Firstly, I want to tell you that at Chabad, we believe that labels belong only on clothing, not on people. And therefore, if you were to walk into a Chabad center anywhere in the world, whether it's in Champaign, Illinois on campus, or Berlin, Germany, you know, wherever you may be, you would see that Chabad attracts a very diverse crowd, mostly actually unaffiliated or Reform or Conservative students. I mean, we don't have too many Orthodox on our campus, but that as well. I personally grew up within Orthodox Judaism, traditional Judaism, I like to call it. I don't like the labels, meaning the idea of strict Torah observance. But one of the things at Chabad, what people are so attracted to, is the idea is that we are not here to tell people that you have to be like me. We're here to teach you the joys of Judaism, the love of Judaism. So when I speak about Judaism, whatever I say on the show, I'm speaking about how it's looked at within traditional Judaism for 3,000 years.
Spell Chabad for us.
C-H-A-B-A-D.
I want to get back to that. We have a caller waiting on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes. I'm calling about the whole concept of acceptance, which is one of the hardest ones I've ever experienced as a Christian. Here am I, send me, is what I mean by acceptance. Who of us can say that? I can't. Anyhow, that's my question, Rabbi. Who of us can say, here am I, send me, and I'll listen to your answer off the phone?
So the caller identifies herself as a Christian and says and quotes something from the Christian Bible, the New Testament, as it's sometimes called. I guess it's from the Hebrew Scripture, isn't it? Here am I, send me. Let's see. Who was it that responded to God's command by saying, all right, I'll do that.
Samuel,
sure, perhaps.
Throughout the history. I mean, I'm not exactly sure where you're. Maybe you can explain me the specific question.
She was asking about acceptance. How do we accept a call from God?
Very, very, very good question. Actually, you see, in Jewish tradition, you know, Chabad. We know a lot of our study and understanding is based on, we have the written, the Torah, and then there's the mystical dimension called the Kabbalah. And I wouldn't say the Kabbalah that you know, the Madonna Kabbalah, that's pop culture Kabbalah, but I'm talking about the inner dimensions.
Madonna the singer, the pop.
Yeah, Madonna the pop singer Kabbalah, which has made Kabbalah very popular. But that's not the Jewish idea of mysticism. But basically, we believe that God wants us to do good. And God only cares for our better. It's like we believe the relationship is a loving relationship. We do things, we're good people, and just like if someone who loves us, if we would love someone dearly, we would do things out of our love, and I accept that love. It's a created love. So too within my religion, I should be doing things not only because I fear, which is I would use the term more because I am in awe. And because I'm in awe of God, and because I love God. And therefore, I accept what God wants of me because I look at it as a relationship. And in every relationship, I want to give as much as I want to get. And actually, in Jewish tradition, the Hebrew language, ahava, which means love, doesn't, when you say la ahov, to love someone, ahava doesn't mean what I am getting, it's what I am giving. And that's what we have to look at in a relationship. What am I giving to my faith, to my heritage, to what God wants for me, because I get so much for it.
How do people in the Jewish tradition know what God wants them to do? How do they know what is good?
Firstly, there's the written set of rules, written set of commandments, which is in the Torah, the Bible. Then there's a lot of rabbinic writings. One of the famous books is called the Talmud. Before that was the Mishnah. And which these are basic discussions between the rabbis discussing the Torah. And based on that was written a code of Jewish law. But generally, we had actually just had a class yesterday at the Chabad Center called Jewish Ethics. And one of the questions was, as you just asked, what is the right way that a person should choose for themselves? And the answer was, one that brings beauty to himself and brings beauty to the world. Meaning a person has to always think, what I am doing, is it going to enhance the world? Is it going to make a difference to the world? At the same time, is it going to make a difference to me? And that is generally how you stop, think, and remember. Whatever I do, is this positive or is this negative? Because if you look inside many books, you know, King Solomon wrote some wonderful books, and it says, and we had actually in the Torah a few weeks ago, we were discussing this, that God says, all I want from you is to keep the commandments and to be good people. And that's what it's all about.
Now, there's so many commandments that the Torah is five fairly long books.
Right.
And there are a lot of commandments in those five books
of
the Jewish Bible and the Christian Bible as well. How do we know which are more important? And sometimes isn't there a conflict between various commandments?
Very good question. Firstly, I want to preface by saying that the official 613 commandments that people might hear, which is within the written Torah, meaning the Bible, not in the oral tradition, many of them don't even apply to today right now because many of them apply to the temple in Jerusalem, which we don't have right now. Additionally, again in this ethics class yesterday, the same question came up. And this book that we are learning called Ethics of Our Fathers, it said, never judge what is a greater good deed and a smaller good deed. Because what looks greater might just look greater over here, but you never know what its effect is in spiritual realms or in its long run. You shall never judge. When a good deed comes to your hands, do it. It's not only a big deal to do things that people will know about or things that you feel you pulled someone out of the water. It's just as big as a good deed to help someone cross the street and carry their bags with them. And Judaism stresses a lot. The Torah is very humane. A lot of it is just about being good people. It's about helping another. You know, the Torah is divided up into 53, 54 sections, and we read one a week. And just the portion that we read yesterday, a lot of it talks about if you see a friend in need, help them. And that's what a lot of what Torah is about. It's about helping and about being good people. I mean, there are specific laws to specific occasions as well. But, yeah.
One of the things that students learn very quickly when they come to university, and some have learned it even earlier, is to think critically and ask questions. And the scientific method, of course, is taught very enthusiastically. Right. What do you think about critical study of the Torah, critical study that looks at these passages and says, well, this was for this time, this is something we can understand in a literary way, in a historical way, in a sociological way, but it really doesn't apply to us today.
Right.
Can you think that way about the Torah?
I always encourage questions. That's firstly. I always encourage students, and being a rabbi on campus, I'm sure for any faith-based group on campus, that's something that you know a lot. There's going to be questions. We encourage questions, and these questions always come up. I personally believe, and traditional Judaism believes, that the Torah is not something of yesterday. The Torah given on Mount Sinai 3,319 years ago, it applies to today as much as to yesterday. My job is to try to figure that out. Now, I might have a question, how do I correlate the Big Bang Theory with the idea within Judaism where it says the Torah that the world is created in 6 days? So we have to work on it. There are many people that are great scientists that are also rabbis, and they give different answers for different things. So I think it's important to question, to ask, and at the end of the game, if I don't understand, sometimes I have to just give it and say, I just don't understand. I can't understand everything.
Let me encourage listeners to call with questions. This is a live radio show every Sunday night from 5 to 6 p.m. here on WILL AM 580, a radio service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. If you have a call, if you have a question or a comment, please call. We are eager to have you join us. 1-800-222-9455 is our toll-free number. So if you're listening where it's a long-distance call, do use that number. And that includes if you're listening on the Internet. This program is available via computer around the world. And if you're in the continental U.S., You can use that 1-800-222-9455 number. And the website, of course, is will.uiuc.edu. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, we have several local lines you can access by punching in 333-9455. We're talking with Rabbi David Teichtel of the Chabad Center here on campus. He's the director there. And you were telling me before we began that you have a brother, actually several siblings, who are directors of Chabad centers. And you're going to go visit one in Germany for the dedication there in Berlin later this week. Tell us about that.
It's actually very interesting. You know, Chabad as an organization, we have centers in about 3,500 locations across the world. A lot of our centers are educational. A lot of them are community service, you know, orphanages and social services. And in my family, it turned out that seven of us not only got involved in Chabad, almost all of us actually direct our own centers, meaning if I wanted to work for someone, I could do that. Oh, directing your own means you are fully responsible on the grassroots and the fundraising and administrative. And seven of us ended up in seven different parts of the world.
We do have a caller. We'll get back to that in a moment. Line number four, yes. Go ahead, line four.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to say that I agree with pretty much everything the rabbi has said, and I haven't had a lot of exposure to the Jewish faith. But one question I have is regarding a lot of the policies of the state of Israel. I just feel like I've kind of disagreed with some of those, but I feel like it's hard to be critical of the state of Israel without being labeled as being against Judaism. Is it possible to be a supporter of the Jewish faith and Jewish tradition, but still hold a critical eye to some of the policies that the state of Israel has enacted against others? Thank you very much.
Thanks for the question.
Generally, you know, this world, everyone has a right to feel what they think about anything in the world, and you have a right to be critical about anything that you feel. Being critical of a policy doesn't mean being critical of a faith. And it's always encouraged people to speak up with the intent of trying to make resolution. You know, on campus, many times I meet people that think very differently than I might think or very differently than my faith might think. And I always encourage people to talk and to have dialogue. And on the contrary, if you could be a big supporter of the Jewish faith and have, you know, critical questions of how things are handled in Israel. It doesn't mean that your friend has to agree with you or everyone has to agree with you, but it's important. I think one of the reasons why we are where we are today in this society is because people ask and people question and people sometimes are critical. Again, we always have to think, why am I being critical? Am I being critical because I want to see change or just for the sake of being critical? And if I'm being critical because I want to see change and I want to, hopefully my feelings will make a difference, on the contrary, it's not hand in hand. You do sometimes see people, when people criticize Israel, people say, oh, that person is becoming anti-Semite and everything. You know, every case is different and you can't judge it all. You know, I can't sit and say why in some cases people are lumping anti-Israel as anti-Semitism and other times people aren't. It depends on the case, on what happened, and which actually brings us into our discussion, which we were just saying. I'm actually going to visit Berlin, Germany, coming up shortly. I have a few of my siblings, we direct centers. My brother moved to Berlin, Germany about 11 years ago to establish a Chabad. You know, Chabad is in basically every city in the world where you'll go today, you'll find the Chabad center. You know, you Google Chabad, you'll have tens of thousands of pages. Chabad's goal is to bring the joys of Judaism, social and community service, love your fellow person, love your fellow Jew. So my brother moved to Germany. This is going back in 1996, 11 years ago. My grandfather, who lost his whole family in the Holocaust, his father died in the Holocaust. I mean, he wanted to disown my brother. He's like, what are you thinking? You're going to the place that literally was responsible for the end of a big part of my family. So my brother's response was 11 years ago. He said, what better response to the Holocaust than bringing a revival of Jewish life to the city to where it was, unfortunately, people tried to destroy it, and to a country that was responsible for it all. And 11 years later, they're dedicating a new center, a new Chabad center of Jewish life. This center, there's going to be a kosher restaurant, a services, social community services. And which brings you back to the question of the caller. It goes on the other side of the table as well. Because some people's feelings about Israel, you know, what about the policies or whether they agree or whether they don't agree, unfortunately, it's bringing a rise to anti-Semitism again to many places in the world because people are fuzzing the whole idea there. If I might not agree with Israel policy, it doesn't mean that I don't have to agree with every Jew. And therefore, within Europe, in Germany, less than other European countries, but there are Jewish people being hurt and beaten up or things like that because of things that are going on in the Middle East.
I know you've traveled to Israel with student groups many times, and I know you lived there for a year yourself. When was that?
I lived in Israel in 1996. I spent a year of study there, right in a little village called, it's not a little village actually, it's a large village. It's near Tel Aviv, it's called the Village of Chabar. It was established in 1949. Today it's essentially a city, they just still call it a village. And it was an amazing experience. I mean, I love visiting Israel, and as you mentioned, I bring students to Israel at least once, if not twice a year, on Birthright Israel, 40 students. And, you know, it's an amazing experience. You get to learn about the culture, the people, the land, the history, the past, the present, and the future.
I've been disappointed when talking with Jewish students who've gone on the Birthright Israel trips that they don't get to go into the Palestinian territories. Why is that?
Birthright Israel takes a very big responsibility. Birthright Israel, I say, generally, take a step back. Birthright Israel is an umbrella organization that they, which is a partnership of philanthropists, the State of Israel, and federations, which the goal is to bring students, Jewish students, to Israel, their birthright, their name. Come back to the right of every Jewish person, which was promised to us, you know, that's every Jewish person's belief. They give money to providers. Providers bring students. Chabad provider named Mayanot is one of the largest providers. At the same time, they are bringing 20,000 students to Israel a year, 15,000 students to Israel a year. I can't speak for them, but what I understand, they have a big responsibility. God forbid, you know, they brought 140,000 students already. They stick away from anywhere where there might be, it's not only within the territories, within Israel itself, you know, now things, thank God, are good. But a few years ago, when there were bombings in malls, they didn't go to malls. Even this year, one day, we usually go to a certain shopping square, we get intelligence that don't go. So they have to be on top of it. They have a responsibility. There's liability. We went this summer. We are going from all the way up north down south. We drove through the Jordan Valley. We had to get clearance beforehand. It's a responsibility. When I personally go to Israel, there are a lot of holy sites that I like visiting all over. And, you know, I'd visit Hebron and Bethlehem and everything. As every person who goes to Israel should visit what's important to their faith and what's important to their understanding. And I just actually in conversation, though, with the chancellor of our university who just went to Israel. They visited both, they visited Israel and they visited Al-Quds within the West Bank. You know, it all depends. There's a lot of logistics involved there. And you have to take that into consideration as well.
It's such a small country, and the wall that's now being constructed, that's many people have very strong feelings about, either that it's very helpful or that it's very destructive, is making it even more difficult to get around, particularly for the Palestinians. Do you see any hope for some kind of a two-state solution?
I'll tell you like this. I believe, you know, we took the students to the border of Syria, to the border of Lebanon. They were near the West Bank. They saw the wall, the fence, whatever it wants to be called.
Right.
We all want peace. Everyone wants to have, a solution where people can live together. Unfortunately, the reality is a two-state solution is not even the thing today. Today, it's about a one state, and that state shouldn't be Israel. Unfortunately, most Palestinians don't believe and feel with this propaganda and what's going on. Many of the people that I have met told me they've lived better under Israeli rule before they were. But Israel has to do certain things to protect itself. On the contrary, we spent on our trips, we had 8 days with Israeli soldiers, and unfortunately they're being demonized. They're young 18, 19-year-olds who are just doing... Israel goes out of its way to protect the quality of life. Israel goes out of its way to do what it can. You know, it had to build this fence, which our students saw, which most of it is thin metal fence. To, you know, since they did that, suicide bombings have gone down. We would hope that that shouldn't happen. We would hope, unfortunately, so many good Palestinians are living under harsh conditions because their leadership made it for them that way. You know, we could go through a lot of history here. And that's what I feel a lot on campus. A lot of times on campus, a lot of arguments and discussions and disagreements. And I encourage, let's get back to the facts. What is Israel? Where did it begin? What's the concept? And if you look through the history, throughout many of the wars, I'm saying the recent history of the past 55 years, Israel so many times lost life trying to protect life. And so many of it, unfortunately, they're so portrayed negatively in the local media that you could think that they're a devil. They're terrible. And a lot of Jewish students have the same questions as well. It's not that if you're Jewish, you think Israel's the best place. Unfortunately, many don't. And that's why I encourage people to go to Israel, visit Israel, see for yourself. You know, I've met people that live in the West Bank, and many of them lived better under a leadership that's responsible and it's going to take care of their needs. Nobody wants walls. Nobody wants hardships. No one wants to, even Israelis don't want to have to go shopping. You know, going to your local mall. Imagine going to Marketplace Mall and you are checked at the door to see if your bombs. It's sad, but generally Israel as a whole, it's good and it's people live there. But unfortunately, because of incidents, they had to do what they had to do, and. I hope there'll be a day, and I believe there's going to be a day, that people are going to live side by side happily. But that day is going to come when people really want to do it, and not want it to be only, as I said, a one-state solution with Israel not being that state.
We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this Sunday evening with Rabbi David Teichtel, the director of the Chabad Center here at the University of Illinois. We're talking about the Jewish New Year and a lot of other topics that are connected to Jewish thought and life as they begin, as Jews in this community and around the world think about beginning the new year, new beginnings. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Coming up next week, we'll be talking with Professor Ed Colleger. Professor Colleger is one of the speakers at the University YMCA's Friday Forums this fall, talking about citizenship without borders. He'll be speaking at the Y on Friday, October 5th, but we get to interview him here on the radio about that same topic next week. So we'll be talking about global issues. Ed is the director of the Center for Global Studies here at the University of Illinois. And he's going to be, his topic at the Y is From Superpower to Besieged Global Power, Restoring Global Order After the Bush Doctrine's Failure. Should be a provocative speech at the Y on October 5th, noon on Friday, that Friday, and also a good discussion here on the radio coming up next week, September 2nd. Citizenship Without Borders series begins September 14 at the University Y, 1001 South Wright Street, easily available by bus from anywhere in the community. Our first speaker will be Nick Bermoulis, talking about blogs, political activism, and new public spaces. Professor Bermoulis is professor of education, has a named chair here at the university. Then coming up, some of the other speakers, Lewis Sell, William Urbach, Evan Freund, Gail Summerfield, Ellen Bullock, Patrick Keenan, and Baruz Gamari Tabrizi. Also at the WIAC this fall, Know Your University, a series of lectures on Tuesdays. So we have the Friday forums, of course, at Friday at noon, all free lectures. You can buy food at the Y Eatery. Good food from Thailand. The first Know Your University is Tuesday, September 11th at noon, and that'll be some people from the Wall-to-Wall Guitar Festival who will be demonstrating guitar techniques and talking about playing guitar, particularly Richard Alkiri, Scott Swartz, David Spellman will be at the Y September 11th. And then an unusual event on September 18th, that Tuesday, we'll have a public forum on race and ethnicity led by the people who created the NWC program, that's going to be at Krannert. It's all sold out. They're thinking of adding another performance. I don't know if that's possible yet. But to come to this discussion on September 18, it will require tickets. This is a program that will be dealing with racially charged language, and we want people for sure to know that's what they're getting when they come to that discussion. So tickets are free, and they're available at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. You can call there 333-6280 or email krann-tix@uiuc.edu, T-I-X is tix, or go to their website, krannertcenter.com. Free tickets are available for the September 18, Tuesday, Know Your University discussion on race and ethnicity and language. Let me take one more moment to thank people who donated to the University YMCA's Great Garage Sale that happened Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We had many volunteers, many people who donated items, and we had a marvelous sale, and there were very grateful people, students and others, who received things inexpensively, and we kept mountains of things out of the trash heaps. So thank you for helping the Y recycle things, and thanks particularly to groups who provided food for the volunteers those 3 days. We had volunteers just living at the Stock Pavilion, and Silvermine Subs, and Papa John's Pizza, and the Y Eatery, the Y Thai, as well as Papa George's Greek restaurant and the former Pickles on Neal Street, all provided wonderful food for our volunteers. So thanks to all those groups for helping us. We'll be getting back to our talk with our rabbi now, Rabbi David Teichtel of Chabad, and we have a caller patiently waiting on line number one. Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I have two questions. One not too serious, and the next one is more of a serious nature.
Okay.
I actually, I'm not Jewish, but I taught at Roosevelt University, and I was just wondering, I really miss a good Jewish deli, so I don't know whether you'll have any influence in the future to have someone start one, but I miss the food.
You know, we worked with a lot of local businesses and a lot of local supermarkets, and actually after a year and a half now, we just finalized, not just last semester with the University of Illinois, there are a lot more kosher options now in the city. You could buy deli in meat stores, but God willing, yes, we're looking for an investor. If you ever want to invest in the kosher deli, you need the kosher part of it, you get the deli part of it, and we'll make a plan.
Yeah, well, what happens is that I enjoyed them in Chicago and also on the South Side.
Yeah.
You know, the soups are just tremendous. I mean,
yeah.
But anyway, the next one, and I don't know whether it's a misunderstanding or not or whatever, but you can verify that for me. But in the Jewish tradition, and where did it come from, if it in fact is true, is that in terms of the dialogue with God, that in terms of the argument, you know, in other words, you can... There's this thing where you argue with God or something, or is there a misunderstanding or a misinterpretation there?
The idea is, in Jewish tradition, we encourage people to, you know, if something is hard, we could say why, and why does this have to happen to me? And we could use the term argue, but the term, yeah, we could be very upset when we go through a very challenging time, very disappointed. But as I said earlier, everything always depends on what's a mean and what's an end. Am I arguing with God for the sake of arguing, or am I arguing for the sake of my relationship? So if I am questioning and arguing, you know, let's say I went through a very hard time, we have a right to be upset. We lost a loved one. We went through a very hard experience. Yet, you know, we're trying to understand. At the same time, we hope God listens and would make things better. At the same time, we have to understand sometimes we don't understand. You know, it reminds me, we were speaking before about Germany, you know, after the Holocaust, many Jewish people had questions. Where was God? And we continue to ask that. But the fact of us asking that question means that we believe that there is a concept of God. And one of the great rabbis would always say is that we don't always understand God. We could ask and we could question. And many times we hopefully would win our argument and we should demand. But when we don't, we have to realize that we don't understand. So it's encouraged to question and to ask, yet as a mean, not as an end.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Appreciate the question. Let me follow up on that just a little bit. What sort of a God do Jews believe in?
Jews believe in God as a God is not a physical person. God is it's not something that could be physically described, although throughout the Torah it's described, but it just uses human terms. We believe God is a giving God, a caring God. God is someone that cures. It says, basically, it's written in the Torah, in a Jewish text, that God was always around. God created the world for one purpose. He saw a world of people doing good, human being, people just doing good deeds, making the world a better place, a place where God could rest, do good deeds, etc. There's a purpose for all people in this world. There's the Jewish nation. Then there's all nations. It says in the Torah, there are 70 nations. We're all needed. And God needs us each for what's unique for us. And the ultimate definition of, you know, if you want to say what's God, God is someone who wants us to connect with Him and Him to connect with us by making a world of good, doing good deeds, and keeping to it its commandments and His commandments.
Why Him?
It could be Thou. That's why I was like stopping a moment before I said Him. But you know how it is. That's English, the way it came, you know. Interesting, in Hebrew there's so many more nuances with the feminine and the masculine, with not only Him or Her, with so many words. And you have that in many languages, but in English, yeah. But I mean, even within Judaism, for thousands of years, people, you know, were always said, be good or you're going to suffer. Be good or you're going to have a hard time. Within a big part of Judaism, and within, you know, Chabad is founded based on the Hasidic idea, mysticism, is, you know, is a great man named the Baal Shem Tov, who lived about 300 years ago. And he saw that there was two divisions of Jews. There were the simple farmers and there were the intellectual elite. And so we have to go out to the farmlands and encourage people to, you know, about their heritage. And he taught about Judaism is about love. It's about loving one another. It's about loving God. And I'll be honest with you, even here on campus, being a director of the Chabad Center, and I must tell you, in the little over 4 years that we're here, we never in our wildest dreams expected, and we're pleasantly surprised of how quickly Chabad grew. And I could share with you a conversation I had with a student a week ago who came over to a Friday night dinner, and he told me afterward, he said, Rabbi, I always hated religion and thought I hated Judaism. But you showed me today that there's a fun side of Judaism. And that's what we do at Chabad as well. That God, it's a loving relationship. Of course, you have to have the element of awe as well. Because if it's only loving, if a parent only gives a kid candy, the kid's never going to have lines. We love God. There's a joy of Judaism. There's fun. Judaism is fun. Judaism is stimulating. Judaism is exciting. And that's what the definition, essentially, of what Chabad is all over, bringing the joys of Judaism to all over. And that's why on our campus, so many of the students that come to Chabad, those students have not been affiliated. You know, we have 4,000 students on our campus, and we have a long, prestigious history on our campus of Jewish Center. We have Hillel here for some 83 years and the temple here for over 100 years. And many have affiliated, but even more have not, as we find within every faith. You know, even a few hundred were affiliated, 500, you know, 3,500 weren't. Today, students have that opportunity, and a lot of students that never liked Judaism, so to speak, now, because of this aspect and this direction of a loving Judaism, of the joys of Judaism, for them it speaks to as well.
If Chabad is trying to share the joys of Judaism, does it share it just with Jews or with others?
It's a very good question. The beginning of the year now, especially the beginning of the semester, I get emails from many students. They say, am I allowed to come to Chabad if I'm not Jewish? Chabad's an open door for every person. Everybody comes. It's a Jewish center, but people of all faiths come and experience and learn. A lot of what Chabad does is not only faith-based, it's not only religion-based, not only the services and the dinner. There's a lot of social aspects, a lot of community service. You know, we're starting this year a program called Linking Hearts, where we have to, every month there's going to be a different project, visiting the ill, the elderly, homeless, you know, this will be a monthly project. This Linking Hearts, meaning linking students' hearts with the needy people's heart. There's a lot of aspects of it. The underlying aspect is, you know, helping one another, making this world a better place.
Is one of the goals of Chabad to get converts to Judaism from other faiths?
On the contrary, I receive so many emails from students that say I'm considering converting. Jewish tradition, traditionally, does not encourage conversions. On the contrary, if someone comes to a rabbi and says, I want to convert, Jewish law says you have to discourage them. We believe that everyone in this world is here for a purpose. There are Jews and there are other religions. Our job is not to tell other people that they have to become Jews. Judaism not only doesn't proselytize, we are against proselytizing. We believe that we, you know, and therefore when I personally don't do conversions, but if someone calls me, and I usually try to encourage them to go back to what their family's faith is, you know, go to your church, go to whatever it is, why do you want to come to Judaism? Learn about your faith. You could come, well, you're always welcome here, but there's no need to become Jewish. I mean, there are some people that I really want to become Jewish, and if someone really shows in sincerity, they'll go to a rabbinical council that does conversions. And I have, since my few years here on campus, I've seen students convert. But we, on the contrary, do not want and we do not encourage conversions to Judaism. Unless someone really, really wants to do it, we'll connect them to an institution that does it.
And how do you feel about groups, like many Christian groups, that are very evangelical, that really are believe that their mission is, as a Christian, to try to get people, whether they're Jewish or Muslim or Hindu or nothing, to become Christians, or Muslims who are very evangelical? That's not the right word for Muslims.
To be quite honest with you, I actually very uncomfortable with proselytizing. I'm very uncomfortable when people come over to, saying from the Jewish perspective, over to Jewish students and try to convince them to believe in Christian faiths or Islamic faiths. It's something, you know, I have this discussion a lot at the Religious Workers Association with many people of other religions, and I'm from the side of thinking that I'm really uncomfortable with proselytizing. I have many close friends that are evangelical. We have to divide what I agree with and our friendships. It's two separate issues. You know, there are things that we agree to disagree, and I strongly disagree with proselytizing. And if I, you know, when I meet a student that got involved with a different faith, I would do whatever I can to bring them back into Judaism.
This is a live program, and let me remind listeners that if you'd like to join the conversation that I'm having with Rabbi David Teichtel, you may do that by telephone. 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, you may use a toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. Let me follow up an earlier issue and tie it to what we're just talking about. What about Christians' support for Zionism, for Israel? It's often from the extreme right wing of Christianity. It's often sort of unquestioned support for all of Israeli policies and Israel's policies. And one of our previous callers asked about that. Does that make you uncomfortable?
I've met many Christian evangelicals who support Israel. You know, I don't like labeling what's right or what's left or what's, and you know, there are a lot of wonderful people out there, and you know, if they feel that they feel that they want to support Israel, you know, on the contrary. So if you want to support what I believe in, what I'm strong about, you know, what I think is important to support, it's a good thing. The unquestionable stance on issues, that's their feeling. And, you know, as I said earlier, everyone has a right to feel what they want to feel. I don't know if you're alluding to this, there are many Jewish people that ask, evangelical Christians, support of Israel. Maybe their support of Israel is because they believe the ultimate, you know, Jesus will come and convert the whole Israel. And that people are uncomfortable with. But many of evangelical Christians that support Israel because it says in the Bible, those that bless you, I shall bless. And, you know, if it's for positive, you know, the contrary. I've met so many evangelical Christians that are such nice, kind people. I might not agree with that part of wanting to convert people, but I agree with their support of Israel when it's a good thing.
Did you happen to see any of the programs on CNN this week of Christina Amanpour on
That was such a much discussed topic at our Friday night dinner this week, and I didn't get to see it, but I must tell you, it's so much discussed this week. You know, we have to be careful when we let our faith drive us to do things that might not be rational. That's, you know, it's a line. It's you know, if you want, I gave a class last year called Akeda or Al-Qaeda, meaning to say, in Judaism, we give the idea of giving yourself up for your faith. Where does you draw the line? And what our discussion was, there's a difference between giving myself up or giving myself up and taking people with me. And meaning to say, what's the mean and what's the end? Why am I doing things? I didn't see her show, so I can't really comment on it, but I do know it's very much discussed over this past Friday night and Shabbat at Chabad. Many students have been asking my feedback, and maybe I should go back and watch those shows. It's been a busy week with moving, and I didn't get a chance to watch. You know, I'm generally of the personality. I'm a very open-minded, much into dialogue person, and sometimes I agree. Sometimes we have to agree to disagree on certain things, and students know that. That's why they know to ask any question under the sun, whether within Judaism, whether within politics, or whether. Although I generally stick away from politics at Chabad, because I don't want, you know, I want every student to feel comfortable, whether it's American politics or international politics. You should not feel, if you're from one side, they should come. Everyone's welcome. And at Chabad, the students between themselves might get into conversations, as you see probably at the YMCA as well.
Sure. Tell us about what it means to be a rabbi, particularly of Chabad. What are some of the things you do? I know, for example, that you issue kosher certification. What does that mean?
You know, actually, I can answer the kosher, I can answer the rabbi. You know, a rabbi, many people have a vision of a rabbi, someone who stands behind the pulpit, and it's so hard to reach. And students tell that to me as well. When they meet me the first time, they say, wow, I never imagined I'll be speaking to a rabbi. Because I always say there's a pulpit rabbi and there's a people's rabbi. And I could tell you a little bit about the style of rabbi that I am, which is a people's rabbi, meaning we do the pulpit, but we're also there for the people in time of, you know, whether it's religious needs or whether it's, you know, basic needs, it's mundane needs, it's caring about your fellow person, it's being available to visit a hospital, a courtroom, a jail, a dormitory, not in that order, anywhere, to help, be there to help someone. A rabbi is supposed to be someone who you could turn to in time of needs for anything, not only for if you have a question regarding a religion. A rabbi also gives, you know, we at the university, which we just worked so closely with to make the kosher meal plan, which actually helps a lot of Jewish students and Muslim students, because halal, now it was last year once every other week, and this year every single Wednesday in Allen Hall from 4:45 to 6:45, there's kosher food, both. And we have, you know, there around that table, you have Jewish students, Muslim students, because it's kosher meat.
And vegetarian students,
yeah. I mean, and a lot of vegetarians tell me they heard that that it's greener on the kosher side. But, I mean, you know, a lot of working with that. I personally believe in giving back to the community, not only being there to help the Jewish community, but also you have to give back to the community. Therefore, I serve on an emergency support team with the police and fire department. And God forbid there's a time of need, I'm there to help people if there's a fire or, God forbid, something else, to give support, work with the Dean of Students Office to help in time of need. I just believe it's being available for others. It's not a 9-to-5 job. Being a rabbi is 24/7.
I know you focus on Shabbat, on Friday evening, the Sabbath, the services. Tell us about what that's like, particularly at the celebration of the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah.
What are services like?
Yes.
Services are...
What's the life for you? What's your life like on those evenings?
You walk to
get there for one.
Right. I tell you like this, that people say that weekends is the quiet time. Being a clergy, weekends is the hardest time. So every Friday night, it's just a time of celebration. We have a service, which is a short service, which is much joy. There are many people traditionally, if they would not operate a vehicle on Shabbat, they would walk over a mile or a block.
Where's the center?
Our center, though, is right at the center of campus. So it's a block away or two blocks from every student's on 4th Street and campus town. All the information is online. You know, Chabad's right in the center of campus town, 4th near Green. But Friday night's the highlight. I refer to Friday night a lot over the show because Friday night's the Jewish tradition. Shabbat is the culmination of a week. What I referred to earlier, Yom Kippur, after the Jewish New Year, the day of the most solemn day, is called the Shabbat of all Shabbats. That's a more serious day. But generally, Shabbat is a time, it's the service, it's a short service people come to, and then there's a dinner. Rosh Hashanah is the same thing. In the evening, it's a very short service, and it's a dinner where we come together and celebrate. During the day, it is a longer service. But generally, the services at Chabad, we make them a lot of, you know, joyous and dancing and singing. It's very... festive mood.
What's the food like?
Food's part of the, you know, on campus, it's all about the food. It's a good 5-course kosher dinner of topping it all with matzo balls and chicken soup. You know, it's only good times. You know, we started off about Rosh Hashanah, speaking of food. You know, they say this year is going to be the 5,768th year in the Jewish calendar. Someone told me in the Chinese calendar, it's about 4,000. It's about 1,000 years less. So the question is, what does that mean to Jews that the Chinese calendar is 1,000 years less than the Jewish calendar? So someone recently told me that means that Jews have to go without Chinese food for 1,000 years. Kosher, you know, Chinese. You know, you go on campus and every second restaurant is Chinese great kosher. Maybe one day we'll have a Chinese kosher restaurant. But, you know, speaking of food.
What desserts do you have with your meals?
So, you know, there's always, you know, it's interesting to ask that question because in dinner at Chabad, dessert is when it becomes very social. People sit around. Dinner is over, let's say, at 9. People sometimes can sit till 1 a.m. We try to create an alternative venue than drinking in Green Street. You could come and have a good long desserts, you know, of cakes and coffees and ice creams. And once a month, we do a themed dinner at Chabad. We try to learn different cultures. So we can have a Russian, Spanish, Italian, Israeli, American, different themed foods. So come on by and join it if you have any good recipes or just if you like eating or having a good time.
We're close to the end of our time, but in our last 30 seconds, how may people learn more about Chabad?
You could visit our website at www.jewishuiuc.org, or if it's easier, just visit jewishalumni.org. And our telephone number is 355-TORAH. That's 355-8672. Anytime, any question, on our website, we have tens of thousands of pages about Chabad and about Judaism. We have an Ask the Rabbi feature. Again, that's jewishalumni.org.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith has been Rabbi Dovid, that's D-O-V-I-D.
Yes.
Teichtel, T-I-E-C-H-T-E-L, who is the executive director of the Chabad Center. He comes from a family of, I think you said, 13, of which
yes.
7 are directors of Chabad centers around the world. He's going to visit one of his brothers in Berlin, Germany, for the dedication of a Chabad center there this week.
Join Chabad to the world, right?
I want to thank our callers for their good comments and questions. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I'm the executive director of the University YMCA, which is the oldest religious organization on this campus. It's been here 134 years, began as a Christian organization exclusively, and for many decades has been open to people of any faiths or of no faiths to be involved in our activities of community service and social action. One of the WISE programs that's starting up soon this fall is Know Your University, an opportunity for new faculty particularly, new staff, and of course interested students to learn more about this wonderful university. It's sponsored, these are lectures, very informal lectures, given on Tuesday noons. The first one will be September 11th, dealing with the Wall-to-Wall Guitar Festival. Public forum on race and ethnicity done with the Krannert Center for Performing Arts. You can get tickets for that. It's the only one that requires tickets, but you can get them from Krannert Center to learn about, to be able to attend that lecture. We'll be talking about solar decathlon on September 25th. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
The physics world has a new darling called string theory, the idea that the universe is composed of infinitesimal vibrating strings, the subject of best-selling books, a popular TV series, and countless articles. But is it a dead-end street? I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, The Physics Feud. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear with a low in the upper 50s and light east winds. Tomorrow, sunny with a high in the upper 80s and southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s and light southeast winds. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 90s and light southwest winds.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Prairie Boatworks Gallery, Mahomet; Ray's Heating and Air Conditioning, Urbana; Birch Tree Counseling and Consulting, Champaign; and Fertilizer Dealer Supply, Philo. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
This is WILL Urbana, listener-supported public radio. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.